WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Just over a year ago, Keith Raniere, the leader of Nexium, which billed itself as a self-help group, was found guilty of 7 counts that included sex trafficking, racketeering, forced labor conspiracy, and child exploitation. Nexium proved to be part marketing scheme and part cult. While many of the other senior members of the organization pleaded guilty, a few weeks ago, Keith Raniere recently lost a bid for a retrial, and next month he will be sentenced. In late August, prosecutors asked that he be sentenced to life in prison. So what happened? In the new HBO series, The Vow, it follows the stories of former Nexium members as they explain how they fell into the cult and how they fought hard to bring it down. The story first broke in the New York Times in the fall of 2017. That's when a group of people who had left Nexium with tales that seemed unbelievable, but with evidence that was irrefutable, like a brand. Yes, to join what was billed as a women's empowerment group, members had to give some kind of collateral, like a dark secret or nude picture, information that could be used to blackmail them if they tried to tell. At the initiation ceremony, they were branded as a sign of their devotion. And once they were in, they were called slaves. Many were forced to have sex with Nexium's leader, Keith Raniere. Directors Jehan Ujaim and Karim Amer show the inner workings of Nexium through the eyes of two of its high-ranking members who became whistleblowers. And using footage, recorded phone calls, and texts, we see and hear how Nexium unraveled, exposing the crimes of its leaders. The 9-part series airs on Sundays at 10 p.m. Eastern on HBO, and it is must-see. Jehan, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Karim, nice to speak with you.
Thank you.
So, Jehan, what does the name Nexium even mean? What is it supposed to mean?
That's a good question. There's a number of different answers, so I don't want to choose one of them. I would look it up online hear the founder's answer, because I've heard a number of different answers.
So Karim,
it's definitely not that pill that, you know, is out there.
Indigestion. It's not
indigestion.
The indigestion
pill. It's not the indigestion pill.
Well, let's go at this a different way. Karim, what did Nexium promise people? What did this organization promise people?
You know, I think that this organization was successful in attracting people because it promised them a curriculum that offered measurable toolkits for, you know, tracking your self-improvement in a way that seemed to be quite, innovative at the time. It kind of had this kind of scientific approach that they claimed could measure things like self-esteem and pain and joy, these aspects of our lives that are, you know, seemingly immeasurable, but obviously things that, you know, affect our behavior and moods in big ways. So it was offering people in many ways a kind of the ability to unlock your potential on your terms, with you being kind of having the joystick to your own growth in a way that other programs hadn't offered. But it's similar to things like Landmark, mm-hmm. and came from the tradition of EST and comes from this whole kind of world of self-actualization, which is a huge part of our culture, and which we're constantly being bombarded with, both in advertising and arguably even with social media, telling us, you know, everything you can be measured with how many likes you have and how much you can improve, and you can be kind of the, you know, we're constantly kind of encouraged to kind of be part of this idea of, in my opinion at least, that, you know, we can grow out of our problems and out of our woes.
Jehan, Keith Raniere was co-founder of Nexium. where he was to be addressed as Vanguard. We'll get into that in a little bit. When did he start NXIVM, and how did he start it?
I believe the organization was started about 20 years ago, and he started it with his co-founder, Nancy Saltzman, and the idea was that he was going to start this human potential organization, and it started with a very few people, and it began to grow through word of mouth.
There was this, Karim, there was this aura around Ranieri that he had an IQ of 240, that he was a concert pianist, that he was a triple black belt in judo. He went to college at age 16. First of all, did you get to the bottom of how much of that was true?
Well, we didn't have to get to the bottom of it because the court was able to really reveal a lot of information about his past when the trial began last summer in the New York in Brooklyn, actually, in the Eastern District. So a lot of the kind of mythology was dispelled by what the court brought forward.
And Jehan, as you worked on this film and you watched all this footage of him, why did he appeal to members of NXIVM? Why did he appeal to people?
I think he appealed to many people who took NXIVM classes. I mean, 18,000 people took the 16-day, which is sort of the intro class. Whereas, you know, the kind of the big story that emerged in the papers and all over the place was the story of DOS, which around 100 or 125 people were a part of. But, you know, I took the intro class along with many others, such as Richard Branson. I believe Jennifer Aniston took it. I believe a number of different people who, you know, who wanted to try out a class in self-improvement took this class. And I think people were looking for answers. You know, we're all looking for answers. We're all looking for meaning in life. We're all looking for a tribe to belong to and a community. You know, in these lonely times, you can be online all the time and part of a million different groups and still feel lonely. And I think that people are looking for what, you know, what maybe used to be found in religion, you know, conversations
or government,
that you have about, you know, the meaning of life or government. Yeah. Or the conversations that you have about the meaning of life around the dinner table when you have sit down dinners at home. And I think people were really finding that there and taking the time out of their life
also
to really start thinking. Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, it's also important to remember, I think, that people weren't, like, the appeal to a lot of people who took the classes at NXIVM wasn't necessarily just Keith Raniere himself. Mm-hmm. A lot of people were brought in because of this class you could take. You know, the idea was, you know, how important is your self-improvement to you, right? And, you know, what if you could unlock some of the potential success that you feel you're on the cusp of, or what if you could eliminate certain behavioral patterns that you feel are holding you back? And as often a lot of these groups thrive, it always comes from a recommendation, someone who's enrolling you into this class. And, you know, you trust a friend, you take the class, and you get really excited about the tools. And just like with Landmark and other classes like that, the opportunity at the end of the class is always like, well, this is just the first layer of a whole new path that you can be on, a self-discovery to improve your life and write your life according to your own rules. And then in the back, it's like, and here's this guy, Keith, who's kind of the founder of this stuff, because he's this brilliant guy who kind of cracked the human code on behavioral patterns. And so most people didn't ever meet Keith, right? Like, he wasn't physically there. The thousands of people who took NXIVM, probably 90% never even met Keith ever. But people who joined the organization as a professional process, that's where the relationship became quite different. And that's where our series, it it focuses on the stories of the people who actually worked in the organization and became full, who devoted their career to it and their lives to it. And, you know, some of them met their spouses in it. And really, it was a way of life. It wasn't just a company that they worked at. It really became a way of life that they were fully participants in.
My guests are Jihad Najami and Karima Mayer. We're talking about The Vow, which is on HBO, following a bunch of people who were higher ups in Nexium and their quest to try to bring justice and truth to people. I do want to play a clip from this series of one of our main narrators and guides for the story. He's a former hardcore Nexium devotee, filmmaker Mark Vicente, a documentary filmmaker best known for a film about spirituality and physics called What the Bleep Do We Know. Here he is describing, this is Mark, describing meeting Keith Raniere for the first time.
This guy walks in, who's like short and like bouncy, and he was like an odd guy. And there was a part of me that was like, this is the dude.
For breakfast. You can't come to Nancy's house without breakfast.
Bagels.
But you never know where wisdom comes from, you know? Well, who's to say that this guy, who's just like really strange and interesting, might not be in fact like somebody that could actually help the world.
So shall we sit down?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so we begin having a conversation. And that conversation lasts for 5 hours.
All set?
Mm-hmm. And in that 5 hours, I'm asking him about dark matter, quantum mechanics, a whole bunch of things, and he's telling me stuff that's just blowing my mind. And I'm saying to him, I've never heard these ideas before. He goes, well, it's based on a new mathematics that I've developed. And I said, like, you've developed a new mathematics? He goes, yeah. But he was like super, super gentle about all these things, you know?
So to give people sort of a visual of what Keith Raniere is like, it's kind of like if you had Jared Leto and Richard Thomas, the actor, put together. Sort of he's bespectacled and kind of quiet. But he has some odd behaviors, Karim. And I just am sort of curious, as you've been steeped in this, why people didn't think some of his behaviors were odd. He kissed people on the lips. He was obsessed with playing volleyball at night. If you are a member of Nexium, just if you can put yourself in those shoes, Karim, why is that okay? Why doesn't that raise a red flag?
You know, I wasn't a member of Nexium, so I don't want to speak on behalf of other people's experiences. But what I can say is that from the interactions I've had with people, it's, you know, if you are feeling like you're performing at the best you've ever performed, which many people in Nexium in the beginning were feeling, right? Mm-hmm. You're able to normalize a lot of behavior, you know? Mm-hmm. Like as Bonnie says in episode two, one of the characters, you know, okay, so what if this guy is, you know, he kisses people on the lips and he makes everyone do it and he does some weird stuff and he's kind of goofy, but, you know, what if his tools are genuinely improving my life and I feel that they're helping other people, what's the big deal? And I think that was kind of like the beginning mm-hmm. of it. And I think a lot of the stuff that he did that people have now found to be extremely challenging was kind of swept under the rug and not really like there was a lot of secrecy in the organization mm-hmm. that wasn't as apparent to people when they first took the classes.
Jihan, the other co-founder was Nancy Saltzman. You mentioned her earlier, and she appears in a lot of the early informational videos that Nexium produced, and she led these what are called intensives. It's so interesting that there's a whole language that you have to learn, or you come to learn as you watch the series and you get involved in Nexium. Can you describe what the intensives are?
Gosh, there are so many people that would be better than me to describe it, but I'll do my best. So the 16-day intensive or the 5-day intensive, you come and you meet in groups, and you go through these different modules, and they are modules that are named things like honesty and disclosure, and you talk about what honesty is and what disclosure is, and it starts to get deep into ethics and what are your ethical opinions about things. And this was surprising to me when I came, I thought I was going to, you know, be more on time for my meetings and more efficient in my work life. But it ended up going a lot deeper than that and started to look at what are the sort of emotional blocks that you have for not being the person that you want to be. I think similar to, you know, West in the 60s and 70s and, you know, a number of these sort of self-help organizations. And so the process is very much that people sort of, there's these questions that are asked and you ask these deep questions of you and you go yourself and you go through these sourcings where you are asked to, for example, take a person that you love very deeply, and if something went wrong with them, think, you know, understand why it went wrong with them and talk it through with a number of different people using these tools. And so, and also Nancy's video plays at the front of the class. So if you're looking at a question, you go through these questions and you come up with answers of what you think trust is, or what you think honesty is, or what you think failure is. And then you'll have Nancy's video at the top of the class, which you see through the series at times, talking about what their philosophy on those terms mean.
But the idea is that you go on an inductive journey that is, you know, in a group environment, and that is meant to allow for you to, it's important to remember this subscribes to the kind of the emotional behavioral therapy school, which an NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming, which is a kind of fascinating space that some say is groundbreaking, like Tony Robbins, and others will say is pseudoscience and just the, you know, the, so it depends who you talk to. Certainly if you speak to therapists on the Upper East Side, a lot of them will dismiss it. But at the same time, no one can deny the fact that NLP-based modalities are some of the most successful and fastest growing therapies. You know, it's important to remember that this notion that seekers are people who are, you know, foreign or minority in our society is, I believe, to be quite untrue. Mm-hmm. You look at the number of people who have life coaches, number of people who are taking ayahuasca to try to have a, you know, an understanding, the number of people who are seeking, and the number of people who are going back to kind of born-again churches in this country. And I think it speaks to the fact that there is a deep desire in the American psyche to understand the basic questions of who we are and where we're going, and whether we're in control of our own destiny as much as we're promised at a young age that we have the God-given right to be. Well, and that's where I think groups like Nexium are so successful mm-hmm. at recruiting people.
Well, that's the point that Mark makes at one point, that no one tries to join a cult. You're joining something because you think it's possibly good for you, or it's enlightening, or it might give you some sense of spirituality. Before we go to break, I do want to, because you said something earlier, Jehan, I didn't want to let drop, is that you took some of these courses. What was that? What was that experience like? And could you see how you'd want to do more? A person want to do more?
Sure, it's a good question. There's this general perception in the public that it's only damaged or troubled individuals that are attracted to organizations like this or curriculum like this. But I would say that I was very much at the top of my game when I took the classes. I had big questions in my life, but I was seeing it as a way to think through decision-making processes. And everybody in the world has these big questions about their lives. So I met people there who were head of law firms, successful executives, actors. Successful or not, everybody at the end of the day has the same basic questions. What's my purpose? Do I belong to a community? Do I want to be a bigger part of a community? Am I a good person? That's a range of questions all people ask of themselves, or you hope that people ask of themselves. So I found the sort of the people that I met that were searching for answers, that had a sense of idealism, to be quite refreshing. And I met many people there who are still dear friends. So I had a great experience, and I guess you could even say that anybody that takes, you know, 10 hours out of your day every day for 5 days to think about some of the biggest issues that you're struggling with, you're always going to end up, you know, moving forward in some way. But I did find a number of very successful people that were just taking a little time out of their lives to sort of ask some deeper questions of themselves.
And to be clear, did you just take these courses because you'd heard about them, or did you take them in relationship to this documentary series?
No, I met Sarah Bronfman on Necker Island. I had won the TED Prize, and I was going to a number of different conferences, sort of figuring out what I would do for my TED Prize. The TED conferences gives you this wish to change the world, and I had just won it because of my work on Control Room. And on Branson's Necker Island, there was this conference called the Alliance of Civilizations, and they were bringing people together to talk about media and how media was working to a very radical topic still today, mm-hmm. divide the world or bring people together. And at that time, I met Sarah, who told me, I met her through Richard Branson, and she told me all about NXIVM. And I thought it sounded very interesting. And then a couple years later at the Cannes Film Festival, I met Mark Decente, successful filmmaker who had made What the Bleep, and he also told me about it. And so I said, you know, next time I have 5 days to take out of my life, I'm going to try it out. So I went to Albany, took the class, and actually at the time, they were wanting to make a film around Keith, the leadership of NXIVM. And I did speak with them about this question of doing something around him, and that was 2010, and doing something around all of the people who at that time were very much against the organization. There were a number of people that were speaking out against it. And what happened next was that the Egyptian Revolution happened. I moved back to Egypt. I met my husband, Kareem, who's on the phone. I had 3 kids and then moved to LA. And finally, because I'm a very good student, finished the class in 2017 in LA, but it took me 10 years to finish that intro class. And it was at that time that there started to be sort of whispers of this secret society and something else going on at the time that I was taking the class. But I didn't hear about it or understand what was happening until about a month after I had finished the class.
My guests are Jehan Ujemi and Kareem Amer. We're talking about their docuseries, The Vow, which is now on HBO. We'll have more after the break. This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. My guests are Jehan Ujemi and Kareem Amer, the directors of The Vow, which is now Sunday nights at 10 p.m. on HBO. It is a docuseries about NXIVM. So, Kareem, some of the things that we've described in these first meetings are things you'd read in many self-help books. There's lots of different sort of people out there espousing this and telling people to take time and think about their lives in ways they can live a better life. Where does the story of NXIVM take a hard turn into something that is malevolent, let's say?
That is the question everyone's trying to answer, right? Like, how does it begin with such a beautiful dream, and how does it turn into such a painful story of betrayal? And I think it's, you know, as we've talked earlier in the show, it's like it's important to remember that people who dared to dream were those who got sucked in further and further into NXIVM, because they said, you know, yes, the 16-day class or the 5-day class is amazing, but the people who we followed, who became our core subjects of the story, which again are not, their experience in no way is reflective of the entirety of the NXIVM experience. That's why The Vow is called a NXIVM story and not the NXIVM story. This is one iteration. But there are people, Mark and Sarah and Nippy and Bonnie, who really, they had devoted their life to building this company and to really helping transform it into a much more global player in the self-help space. And they, after a decade of doing so, awakened to finding that there was a secret society within the organization that they did not know about, that had a very different intent, in their opinion, that was exploitative and abusive. And that led to a kind of sequence of events that nobody imagined, certainly we didn't when we began filming, of them leaving the organization, then trying to convince others that they had recruited to get out of the organization, which was a fascinating kind of turn from a dramatic arc, because here you had the people who had once been the key recruiters now becoming the key people trying to enroll people out of the organization. And that led to them going to the media and getting the media attention to try to get law enforcement attention, because when they first went to law enforcement, the law enforcement authorities were like, well, where's the crime here? You know, everyone here is an adult. Everyone here is consenting. Like, where's the crime? And eventually that picked up into a kind of national firestorm, the media article in the New York Times. And a lot of people got involved to cover the branding story, which really shocked people around the world. And that led to a, you know, federal investigation and Keith Raniere's arrest from Mexico. And where he, you know, where the trial was last summer, and it was a very heated, very emotional trial, over 6 weeks. And now we're about to see the sentencing, that's going to happen, I believe end of October, Keith will be sentenced, as well as Claire Bronfman, who was also one of the people who was arrested. She will be sentenced, I believe, in the next couple of weeks, and her bail, of course, was at a record high, $100 million bail, which was pretty extraordinary. So it's kind of the mushrooming of the story is something that nobody ever imagined. And it's not over.
Karima, it's, you know, there's some really interesting filmmaking here. Let's talk about the process of that a little bit, as well as the content of the docuseries. You have recordings of phone calls, videotapes from workshops, lots of what seemed to be behind the scenes footage. What was the source of all that footage? And did it come to you all at once, or was this something that you guys had to sort of to ferret out?
This trickled in over the last 3 years. There were a number of people filming and recording at NXIVM, and some of it came in anonymously. Some of it came in as people who had filmed. And so there were a number of different sources. Of course, the phone calls that you hear between Mark and Bonnie, and the phone calls that Mark is on, these are phone calls that he recorded.
But the thing that was quite fascinating for us is because here's a story about people, essentially about people's self-introspection, right, in this organization. And so as a result, people had a lot of documentation of their own journey inside this organization. And because a lot of them had been used to documenting kind of and writing journals and keeping kind of, you know, keeping up with this idea of measuring results of yourself, right? There was a lot of source material that they had access to. And our goal in the kind of filmmaking that we do is to try to keep things in the present tense as much as possible. So this is why we tried to kind of follow this journey of people kind of trying to leave this organization and to see where it could take us, and to use that journey as a way, obviously, to understand, to understand the world through their eyes.
My guest, Urshahan.
We were really thinking about the relationship with the self, and watching somebody like Mark, who we'd known for 10 years, who had a very solid relationship with the organization that he was a part of and that he was building, to watch that completely turn around in the space of, you know, a couple of weeks, where he was completely devastated and he was questioning his trust and his belief in goodness and all of the things that he felt that he was there for. It really shook the most important relationship that we have, which is the relationship with the self. And so a very important part of using these recordings was to really understand how that happened.
Karima, I do want to ask follow up on that idea of the same, I want to dive in for one second. I just want to follow up on that idea of the relationship with the self, because and maybe Jahan, you might want to chime in here as a woman, you know, the secret society, this DOS society within NXIVM was, you know, ultimately became completely controlling of women in terms of how much food they ate, what they wore, what they weighed, what they could do during the day. They had to get permission from another member, like a sort of a soror who had, they called each other master and slave. Some of them had sex with Keith Raniere. They got branded. I mean, at this point, what happened? I mean, what has happened to their sense of self? If this was about empowering the self, why, what happened that these women just turned themselves over?
This is exactly why we made the film, because it is such a process that I think is very difficult to understand without hearing firsthand the accounts of people making the choices that they do and why they make those decisions and the process of making those decisions. I don't know if you've ever had a problem in your life that you feel so, I mean, the whole thing obviously sounds totally crazy, master slave, all of this stuff, but when you actually go to the inside and you meet these intelligent women, there were women that were part of DOS that were, that are civil rights lawyers, that are top executives, that are, you know, people who have Ivy League graduates. You know, I mean, these are people that have been successful in their lives. They're not people that have, you know, kind of been incredibly damaged or, you know, in that way. And so when you talk with them and you understand, you really start to hear stories of, this is something that I couldn't get over. I heard that this was a process or that really helped this friend of mine who I greatly admire. She said, okay, well, we're calling this master slave. That sounds very crazy, but I decided to go for it because, you know, I think Sarah Edmondson described it as a heightened coaching relationship where basically you had somebody who was continually coaching you through these questions, right? And the idea when they signed up was you are, yes, you're a slave, but you're a slave to your fears. So let's make you sort of a master of it. Let's see how we can make you live your dreams. And I will be here as your close female friend who will help you through all of these things. And when you watch the series, I think you understand the appeal of it. Whereas if you listen to it from the outside or if you read articles about it, there's, you know, you would think that people that signed up for this would not be in, you know, in their right mind. But I think people that did sign up for it initially thought that it was something that was quite different.
Well, you know, I think I watched all eight. I watched the whole series, and the thing I took two things away from it. One was that manipulation can happen slowly, and that was fascinating to watch because you could see how, as you said, very smart people, very accomplished people, can even be manipulated. That's one part, and the other part was this sense of loneliness, Kareem. That. Being part of a group, being part of a tribe, being part of a family seems to be a very human nature, and people are seeking that, and that can also be taken advantage of and manipulated. That's what that was my takeaway, Kareem.
Absolutely. I mean, I think to your second point, it's like, you know, in many ways what we see and what I hope people see in the story is, and through the lens of these characters, is, you know, in many ways, the story of a crisis of faith, which is a very important story to understand, in my opinion, because we're seeing that happen across our society. I mean, we're seeing it happen across, you know, increasing radicalization happening in all aspects of our society. Just look at the Republican Party, you know, I mean, and what's happening now with people like the Lincoln Project, who are at the forefront of, you know, building the party for 20 years or more, and now they're spearhead trying to take the party down, right? So we're seeing more and more people who are deep in one place, something happened, they reach a boiling point, and they try to get out of it. And I think it's important for us to understand how these, how we can go deep into these spaces and how we can get out. And what I mean by that in this story in particular is, you know, NXIVM was encouraging people to tap into their vulnerability and use their vulnerability as a gateway to understanding their selves better. And that's a very important thing for people to do. But at the same time, what we see in the story is how that vulnerability can be exploited and how that vulnerability can be abused. And how do you reclaim that sense of self when you've surrendered it to someone else? How do you reclaim your agency? So these are all, I think, themes that are quite important for us to understand as a society today.
The name of the docuseries is The Vow. It is on HBO Now. I've been speaking with directors Jehan Jemi and Karim Amer. Thank you so much for joining us.
WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol Probiotic Drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.